Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we're back for another Sunday of True Crime Chatter, if you want to call it that. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. It's going to be a very interesting show. We're going to talk about the Michael Dunn case, and just saying his name just makes me crazy. Today's show is sponsored by Paws for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Paws for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. It is such a great organization. I encourage everyone to go to www.pawsforpurpleheartsorg. Get ready. It is kind of ugly sometimes, but we need to pour it on us right now. That is the legal goo. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuth.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. Okay, now here's the deal. I have the dogs in the house tonight, and I don't have any kidlets here to help me keep them quiet and entertained. So it's just myself and the dogs. And they're really good, though. They'll be quiet. Unless a car door slams 17 miles away or somebody coughs in the next county. Be prepared for a little dog barking. And speaking of the next county, I wish I lived there tonight. I just found out I'm supposed to be boiling my water because of some sort of contamination. That's what my neighbor just told me. And I felt fine. You know, I've been drinking the water all week, haven't had any problems. I didn't feel sick until my neighbor told me that the water was contaminated. Now I have all kinds of ailments happening. And I'm thinking I've got an eyeball growing on my right shoulder. Kind of looks radioactive. Anyway, basically what I'm trying to tell you is I'm in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood, and it's because of the Michael Dunn verdict. I am so upset that he did not get first-degree murder. And I'll tell you why. And I don't normally sound like an alarmist, and I hope you realize that. But I firmly believe that Florida has the potential of becoming a very scary place unless Michael Dunn is convicted of first-degree murder. If we let Michael Dunn off on that count, what is going to stop some other racist creep to do the exact same thing? He could harass a minority playing loud music in a car and then claim they were scared of him, so they shot him. I don't like to hear that type of scenario, because when other people say it, I think, oh, come on, you're being an alarmist. But I get it now. I can see that happening. I don't give in to race baiting at all, but I just feel like it would become almost like an open season. And that's why, it's so important that Michael Dunn be convicted of first-degree murder. My guests tonight, oh, they are not shy about their opinions. We have Kathy from Court Chatter and also the one and only Levi Page from the LeviPageShow.com. And Kathy, welcome. I'm glad you're with us tonight.
Thank you, Trisha.
And Levi, I'm glad you're here as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Trisha.
You bet. Now, I just want to go over this in a quick, very brief outline in case we have listeners listening that are not familiar with the case. Michael Dunn told a carload of African-American teenagers to turn down their music. They were at a gas station. One of them started mouthing off to him. So Michael Dunn got his gun out of the glove compartment and shot into the car. I think it was 11 times, 9 times. Anyway, killing Jordan Davis. He's a teenager. Kids mouth off. They're dumb. They do stupid things. It was so wrong that Jordan Davis had to die. Now then, Michael Dunn and his fiancée drove off, went to the hotel, ate pizza, Dunn walked his dog, and the one thing they never did do was call the police. Levi Page, is that pretty much the basic outline of the whole thing?
Yeah, you are correct. And his defense was that he thought that he saw a gun. And the problem with that defense is that he never told his fiancée that. His girlfriend that was with him, that he saw a gun. So he didn't tell her that story. And don't you think that that would be something to mention to his fiancée? Hey, the reason I shot at them is because I saw one of them with a gun. And we know no gun was found at the crime scene. And don't you think, common sense, if one of the teenagers had a gun, that when Michael Dunn started shooting, that they would have returned fire back at him? So the chances that there was a gun in this case are 0%. The defense tried to argue that the crime scene was not fully secured and that they could have disposed of a gun and then came back later or had mm-hmm. someone come back later and gotten rid of it, but common sense shows that if they had a gun, they would have shot back and returned fire at Dunn when he started shooting. And basically, I know a lot of people are confused about the verdict because basically they deadlocked on the murder of Jordan Davis, and they found him guilty for attempted murder and firing at a vehicle for the other three teenagers that were in the car with Jordan Davis. So basically mm-hmm. there was someone, one person or more on the jury who were convinced that he was acting in self-defense or his life was in danger and he was justified in shooting Jordan Davis. There were also jurors that were standing their ground, so to say, in that jury room and said, you know what, he's guilty, he's not justified. They could not come to a unanimous decision on that. But the good thing is this guy, the chances of him ever going free are slim to none because he was convicted of those attempted murders of the other teenagers. The minimum that he could get is 60 years in prison, and the most is about 75 years in prison. And this guy's 47 years old, and so this guy's probably never going to be free again. And Angela Corey, the state attorney in the case, has said that she will retry Michael Dunn for the murder of Jordan Davis, and it will be a first-degree murder charge. So she's not backing down. Her office is not backing down from prosecuting Michael Dunn.
And here's the thing. Scorekeeper in chat just asked, has any of the jurors spoken out? Have any of the jurors spoken out? And no, they haven't. In fact, the last I heard, they gave a note to the judge saying that they weren't going to talk to anybody. They weren't going to go to the press conference afterwards. And nobody can contact them. So we may never hear from them. I doubt it. I'm sure somebody will come forward soon. Kathy mm-hmm. at courtchatter.com, welcome to the show. I love what you do. All day long, you keep us informed on all of the court actions that we love to follow at courtchatter.com. You really are amazing, as is Levi. I mean, between the two of you, you make me feel smart because I just, you know, read what you say, and then I go, hey, Levi said this, and Kathy said this. I mean, it's amazing what you do. But, Kathy, what you've got your finger on the pulse of the public out there. What has been the reaction with this Michael Dunn verdict, with the hung jury on the first-degree murder charge? What has been the reaction?
People are furious. He's going to be in prison the rest of his life. So mm-hmm. that's a done deal, regardless of how you feel about the guy or the verdict. But mm-hmm. for many, that's not good enough. They want justice for Jordan Davis, and at this point right now, there's been nothing for Jordan Davis. Levi had talked about how, you know, they hung on that first count, and that maybe there was one or more people that believed he was defending himself. I'm not sure that's the case. I think it's more somebody had their heels dug in to one of the degrees, because they could have found him on first degree, second degree, or manslaughter for Jordan Davis, and someone had their heels, one or more people had their heels dug in and just wouldn't compromise to whatever that is. It sounds mm-hmm. like if they found him guilty on the attempted murders, that they don't really necessarily believe the self-defense. I mean, they could, but I think it's going to be more likely that they just refuse to agree on what degree of murder it was
right.
on Jordan Davis.
I hope you're right. I hope that's what it was, because if somebody in there was able to convince the rest of the jurors that, hey, he was really in fear for his life, and he's afraid of minorities, and we have to accept this and let him go on this count, that would just be a horrible message. Already Florida scares me. And I used to love Florida. I was planning on being one of those obnoxious old people driving slow in the fast lane in Florida. And now I don't want to. You know, it's because it's like your people are crazy. Levi Page, don't you think that would just make things worse in Florida if Michael Dunn does not receive first degree, at least first degree, maybe second degree?
I agree. And I've got to defend Angela Corey's office. I think that Angela Corey overcharged in the Zimmerman case, and that is probably why she lost that case. But in this case, I don't think that that's the case, because I listened to the testimony of the people that were in the car with Jordan Davis's friends, and one of the friends, I'm trying to find the name. I think the name is Tevin Thompson. Yeah. He was 18 years old at the time. He was sitting in the passenger seat of the Dodge Durango, and he's the one that actually agreed to Dunn's request to turn the music down. He turned the music down, and Jordan Davis said, don't turn it down. F that N-word, turn it back up, was the response of Jordan Davis, and then the music was turned back up. And then that is when Dunn reached into his vehicle, got his gun out, and shot. And he didn't shoot one or two times at the ground. He, according to Thompson, aimed specifically at Jordan Davis, and he fired 10 bullets at that vehicle. 3 of those bullets struck Jordan Davis, including in the back, which means that Jordan Davis's back was turned to Michael Dunn. How is he threatening Dunn if his back is turned to him? And how is it not intent and premeditated when you're firing 10 bullets? In between the first bullet and the 10th bullet, you have the intent to kill someone when you're firing that many bullets out there. And premeditation can be formed at the snap of a finger. It does not have to be a long, drawn-out plan. So I do not think that this case was overcharged. I think that there is a very strong and compelling argument that the state attorney's office made for premeditated murder. I think what the problem is the stand your ground law. And I think that is what makes these types of cases iffy. That's what makes these cases complex, and that's what makes them murky. It's a problem, in my opinion. And I was of the opinion, before I actually was doing research on the stand your ground law, the defense didn't use stand your ground. They did, actually. What they did not do is they did not use the stand your ground immunity, which would give them the option before trial in a pretrial hearing to go in front of the judge and say, this is a stand your ground case, and we want you to grant him immunity, which means the charges would be dismissed. And defense attorneys don't often don't like to do that in some cases because they're showing their cards to the prosecution, and the burden of proof in that hearing is on the defense to prove stand your ground. So oftentimes they do go to trial. And what the problem with stand your ground is there's something called the castle doctrine, which means that if an intruder is coming into someone's home, they don't have the duty to leave their own home. They can use deadly force, which is understandable, but they took what happens in the castle doctrine and applied that to public places like this gas station. And they do not have the duty to retreat, which means Michael Dunn did not have the duty to drive away. He said that he drove into this parking lot and picked the parking space right next to these teenagers, despite the fact that their music was loud, and then he engaged in an argument and escalated things. He was basically throwing rocks at a hornet's nest, and when he got stung, he wants to play victim and use that as a reason to shoot someone. And if there was a duty to retreat, there would be no question here. And this is a law that's backed by the NRA, by the Republican Party in Florida, and we know how the NRA has a stronghold on politicians. And I think it's a big problem. And I was looking at some stats. The TampaBay.com was looking at the senior ground law specifically in the state of Florida. And people that invoke it as a defense, nearly 70% of the defendants have gone free. And defendants that claim stand your ground are more likely to prevail if the victim is black. 73% of those who killed a black person face no penalty compared to 59% who killed a white. And people say, but he didn't use stand your ground. But he did, because the defense argued that in closing argument, and there is a jury instruction that was used in the Zimmerman case and in the Michael Dunn case regarding Stand Your Ground. So it's a big problem. And in 2012, there was hearings to modify Stand Your Ground law in Florida, but it never went anywhere. And a lot of people are saying with these iffy defense cases where the defendants clearly could have avoided this, that something needs to be happened. It has to be modified. Where
absolutely.
If you have the opportunity to leave and get out of the situation and you don't take it, you should still face consequences.
Absolutely right.
And
my guest tonight.
And I was reading specific cases. I was reading some specific cases, Tricia, and there's a lot of just mind-blowing cases. There was even cases involving animal abuse. There was a man in Fort Myers who a bear was in his yard, was not even threatening him, and he shot it and claimed Stand Your Ground and got off. A West Palm Beach jogger beat a Jack Russell Terrier to death. And you Stand Your Ground. And in those cases, they had no injuries. They just did it to do it and got off. So it's a troubling law.
It is, and I do think we will see some changes in that, absolutely. My guests tonight are Kathy from CourtChatter.com and Levi Page from the LeviPageShow.com. My name is Tricia. We're talking about the Michael Dunn case, and it is turning into a very intense case, although it does seem like both sides, minorities and majorities, are coming together, and everybody agrees that Michael Dunn should not be given a pass for first-degree murder. Now, Kathy from CourtChatter.com, tell me if this sounds familiar to you. I was listening to Vinnie Politan. I love that guy. He is so good on CNN. And they were talking about the fact that it looked like Michael Dunn shot some of the first rounds from his gun from inside his car.
Out until they backed away, until they backed out of the parking spot.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I was a little unclear on when that was. So he was sitting in his car and just went bam, 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 bam. And go ahead.
That's the big problem for me. I have two sides. If anyone that knows me well knows that I, about at least 80% of the time, go into a case trying to see the defense side. Mm-hmm. It's just how I'm built. I would probably be a really good juror. I want the state to prove their case to me. Now, there are some cases that I'm just simply not going into it that way. The guy's just guilty, and that's just the way it is. But I really want the state to prove their case to me. You know, I watch every minute of trials, anything that I can get my hands on that's live streamed. I watch every single minute. I read every court document I can, everything, so I'm very up to date on it. But I want them to prove it to me. And part of me said it's hard to believe that because he didn't like the music and a teenager was mouthing off to him, he'd grab a gun. A guy that really only ever had a DUI in his past and didn't have any violent convictions and has carried a gun his whole life, and he's 47 and is successful in life, and that he's just going to pull a gun out and just empty 9 to 10 rounds at these guys because he doesn't like the music. So I wanted to say to myself, look, he probably was in fear. Like, why else is someone who doesn't necessarily have mental health problems going to grab a gun in that situation, especially somebody who knows how to handle a gun? You know, I've spoken about this before. My husband's an avid gun owner. We have many guns at our house. All of my adult children shoot guns. They all go to the range. It's big here. I don't do it, but everyone in my family is. But they all know how to be responsible gun owners, and it appeared that Michael Dunn was like that. So I wanted to see, can they prove to me he really was in fear? Because my brain said, I want him to be in fear because it's not logical to grab a gun and shoot it. But the problem I had was when the SUV's trying to get away and he gets out of the car and keeps shooting. Now, how are you still being threatened at that point? Now, I know no one believes he was being threatened to begin with, but I'm just saying, if he thinks he saw something, and, you know, Levi said that, you know, Jordan said, F that, turn the music back up, and then Michael Dunn grabbed his gun. Well, it was a little more than that. And Jordan's friend testified to that, and he was honest. His best friend testified, and he was honest and said, you know, Jordan went off. And he was even honest when asked, have you seen Jordan behave that way before? And he kind of bowed his head down and said yes. So it's very believable that he went off. And he was yelling, F you this, F you that. He was calling him the B word. He was doing all that. And pretty much they agree that that did happen. Jordan had a temper, and he was like, you're not going to tell me what to do. So I wanted to believe that Michael Dunn at some point thought he saw a gun. But I can't get past the shooting after they're trying to get away. Then now you are delusional. Now you are a crazy person. If you weren't already before, and he probably was, I mean, I get that. But I wanted to see his point of view. You know, we've seen the jailhouse letters. We know he's a racist. It's very clear that he's a racist. And so knowing that about him, I think he was in fear of four black teens. Whether that's right or wrong, him being a racist is probably a little afraid of what's going on inside that SUV. And that's no defense. I'm just saying, trying to get inside his mind, right?
Right.
So, but no gun ever found. Nobody ever said they had a gun. I have a problem with him saying he saw a shotgun barrel. Well, four black teens in that part of Florida aren't riding around with shotguns. You know, they're not a bunch of rednecks. If they're going to have anything, it's going to be a handgun. So I don't know. So it didn't make a lot of sense. But the premed, I agree with Levi that I don't think it was overcharged, because the premeditation was firing 9 rounds. That wasn't necessary. And they were trying to get away.
Right. Exactly. Well, even if he was truly afraid, you know, that just because you're afraid of someone doesn't mean you can kill him.
I'm not giving that as an excuse.
Oh, I know. Right. I know what you're saying. But anyway, go ahead, Levi Page. Go ahead.
One of Jordan Davis's friends also testified that in the back seat where Jordan Davis was, that the child locks were on. So Jordan Davis never even left the vehicle, and he couldn't have got out of the vehicle unless someone up front unlocked the door, which never happened. So he never even left the vehicle. And part of the stand your ground law, which I don't even think that they could have made a case for stand your ground law, because you have to have a reasonable fear, and his was not even reasonable because Jordan Davis didn't even leave the vehicle, and his defense changed. I didn't get to see all of the defense's closing arguments, but the bits and pieces I did see, maybe Kathy, you know better. Didn't they argue that it was a gun, or it could have been a nightstick or something like that, that he confused the tripod?
Well, in Michael Dunn's police interrogation, he said I saw about 4 inches the top of a shotgun barrel, because the Jordan's window was only halfway down and it was tinted windows. And he said he saw the top portion of a barrel. And the police said to him, there's no gun. There was never a gun. There's no gun there. Mm-hmm. And so then Michael Dunn gets like a confused look on his face, and he says, I saw a gun. Was there a stick or anything that could have looked like a gun? So I think that's where the defense brought it into their closing, that there was something like that. There was a tripod that was found.
He was not even sure that there was a gun. So basically, this is a situation where he, like, shot and asked questions later. And, I think that this prosecution is really getting a bad rap in the media, because I noticed that there were people that were protesting out in front of Angela Corey's office, saying that she did not do a good job prosecuting this case, that her office was not aggressive. Angela Corey's office is known to be very aggressive. This is a woman who seeks the maximum charges in almost every single case that she prosecutes, maybe even too aggressive, some people would argue. And I know that a lot of people are saying they should have entered into evidence the letters that he wrote in jail, where he calls black inmates thugs and said that if more people killed them, then we wouldn't have, then maybe they would think twice before acting the way they do. That's paraphrasing, not an exact quote. But I've heard a lot of attorneys say if they did, even if the defense did open the door and allow some of this character evidence in, that and the appeals court could say it was too prejudicial, that they were using race to inflame the jury and they could have been granted a new trial. So it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't with this prosecution team. But it's interesting, did you see some of the evidence that was not released into trial, Tricia, including the neighbor of George Zimmerman that lived near him for 8 years? His name was Hendrix. I forgot his first name. But he testified.
Oh, the neighbor. Right.
He spoke to the Jordan Davis family attorney, John Phillips, and he gave a deposition to their attorney, and he said that he was light and friendly, Michael Dunn, but if you disagreed with him, that he was overbearing and that he had tried to intimidate people with his size and his voice. So that paints a different picture of George Zimmerman.
Well,
and the jury didn't get to hear that. And I can understand why the jury didn't get to hear it. The prosecution doesn't want to put on prejudicial evidence and have it overturned on appeal. But this gives you some insight into his frame of mind.
Exactly. And that's the thing that we really have to wonder, Kathy, from CourtShatter.com, as we talk about the Michael Dunn case. Why in the world didn't Angela Corey bring out more of this racist, pig-headed jerk type that he is? Then the jury could have said, well, this guy was just looking for it. He'd had all these drinks at the wedding, at his son's wedding. He was a jerk. Nobody liked him. Two of his ex-wives were afraid of him. There's a story in the New York Post today, I think, that claiming that I just saw the headline that his wife, ex-wife claimed that he held a gun to her head, made her go to a sex club. Kathy, why do you think the prosecutor didn't include that? Did she just think, well, it's so strong of a case, I don't need to worry?
Well, first of all, a judge probably isn't going to allow most of that. The judge has to always weigh everything, whether it's more probative than prejudicial. And you can't just put up things that are just like highly, highly prejudicial unless it's going to matter, bring relevance to the case and be related to this case. I think she should have tried to put in something about in those jailhouse letters about how racist he really was and how he really felt about blacks. That may have been overturned, like Levi said, that they didn't want to put stuff in that could be overturned on appeal. But if the judge would have weighed that, they would have had a hearing about it. He would have weighed it to see if it was more probative than prejudicial. And if the judge allowed it in, then there's a good chance it wouldn't have been overturned. And I think that would have got them closer to a verdict in that count one if they knew more about his mindset going into that night and about how he felt about black people. There are some people who can say that the case isn't about race, but I think that it's very obvious about race. I don't think that conversation would have happened if he'd have pulled up to a Durango full of white kids blaring whatever they were blaring. He had a mind.
Right.
His mind was made up about a car full of black teenagers and bass pounding rap music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all have sort of a mind about that, right? At least the music part of it, when you pull up, and it's a big eye roll, and it's like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
I said the same thing, Kathy. You know, I think we've all been in a situation where we pull into a parking lot somewhere, the grocery store, a gas station, and someone is playing their music obnoxiously loud. Most normal folks, though, don't go over to them and start arguing with them.
Well,
you know, we roll our eyes. We go about
our
business, or we call the police and we say there is someone here in a public parking lot that is playing their music obnoxiously loud. Could you guys come over here and tell them to turn their music down? And
that's how normal folks handle it,
but Michael Dunn's obviously not normal.
That happened that night. That was a good example actually happened that night. Another guy pulls into the gas station, pulls in somewhat close to these teens and this music and the car rocking, basically, and he walks into the gas station, looks at the clerk, and sarcastically says, "Wow, I wish they'd turn up that up louder. That's my favorite song," and rolls his eyes because he's irritated by it too. But guess what he does? He goes and gets his fountain drink, and he pays for it, and he leaves because he knows
right.
he's only going to be there 5 minutes, so it's not going to
mm-hmm.
affect his life one way or the other. Now, if somebody's
mm-hmm.
doing that outside in front of my home, then that's a little different. But if I'm in a public parking lot that I'm going to run into a gas station and run back out, what is it any of my business what they're doing inside that car?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not.
I was watching CNN last night, and Don Lemon said that we need a mind your own business law. And
yeah.
isn't that so true? Because a lot of these situations could have been avoided if people simply would have minded their own business and maybe applied a little bit of common sense. George Zimmerman should have simply called 911 and stayed in his car instead of going further to escalate the situation. The same with Michael Dunn. They were not using common sense. They were being busybodies. They were being confrontational. And they got themselves in these precarious situations, and it's hard to be sympathetic to them. It's a tragedy what happened here. And
it is.
It's just mind-boggling that they could not come to a unanimous verdict with 10 shots fired at a vehicle, 3 shots
yeah, that,
piercing a victim, and they can't see that somebody had the intent to kill someone. When you're firing 10 shots at them, you intend to kill them.
I can see where there was a longer discussion about the count against Jordan Davis, because I can visualize the conversation. I watch trials online, and I watch it in a place called Whoop TV, where people like me that are trial junkies and love the law watch trials, and we talk about it as we're watching it. So we had a room full of people, like 100 and something people in there, chatting about this trial the whole time. Well, in there, we all agreed and disagreed about 100 different things, and we kept saying, this is what is happening in that jury room right now. This is what's going on right now. And you have to remember, those people were chosen because they didn't know a lot about this case. So they didn't know what
mm-hmm.
we knew. They don't know
mm-hmm.
any of the background. They don't know any. And so they're in there trying to, the law that was given to them, they're trying to interpret that. And I think the biggest discussion went on about Jordan because he engaged Michael Dunn back. So the testimony there was, he was, I'm not going to do what you say, and he was dropping F-bombs to him, and he was yelling at him through his car. We all know that doesn't mean he should be dead right now. So put that aside because
mm-hmm.
that's ridiculous. But that is why that the discussion happened about him. And in the end,
mm-hmm.
I really think some of those jurors think that Jordan played some kind of part in that, and so they weren't willing to go first degree, and they dug their heels in. It could have just been one person for all we know. But
you know what's interesting, Kathy? I read on your website, Court Chatter, where you had a breakdown of the jury. You know, some of these jury members, male and female, of different races, had teenage sons, and I can just see that some of them in there could be like, you know what, my son probably has played music loud before in a parking lot. My son may have mouthed off at someone who came up to them and told them to turn their music down, and I could see some of them being sympathetic to Jordan Davis, but there was one mm-hmm. juror who was older, whose children were in their 40s, and I could sort of see that juror maybe sympathizing with Michael Dunn.
Right.
What do you think about that?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I think happened in there. I don't think, and I could be off, but I don't think anybody was saying not guilty on the count against Jordan Davis. The
mm-hmm.
argument had to have been what degree, because Jordan played a little minor role where the other three played no role at all in it, obviously. And Jordan played this little teeny minor role, and somebody was in there thinking, I've had that same thing happen, those stupid teenagers, and they're mouthing off, and they're screaming at me and swearing at me, and I'm an older guy, and maybe I don't know what's going on behind those tinted windows of that Dodge Durango. You know, so somebody's thinking, I don't agree with first degree. And the people that wanted first degree dug their heels in and said, we're not going to compromise to lower. And I think that's what went on for hours and hours in there. But you're right, there was such a major difference, diversity in those jury members, that they came from all walks of life. And I think they all, just like every juror in every case, every jury comes in with their own life experiences.
And isn't that a good thing, though?
No, that's a good thing, for sure.
To some extent.
No.
I need to stop right here just to do a couple of quick things, if we could. We're listening to Levi Page from The Levi Page Show and Kathy from CourtChatter.com, and we're discussing the Michael Dunn case, which will have another trial for first-degree murder coming up. But I'm telling you, I think the thing to do is, if you are a tourist and you're planning to spend vacation in Florida, I think you shouldn't go. I'm not going to go to Florida until they change that stupid law.
Well, I'm going there next week.
You are? Oh, don't spend any money. Don't spend any money. I'm going to try one phone call here, okay? And if there's any hint that this person is a crank caller, we'll just hang up and won't take any phone calls. So here we go. We are going to area code. Hold on. Area code 501. Are you there, area code 501?
I am, and I know Cece from Whoop TV.
You're not a crank caller. I'll take my finger off the delete button. And what is your question? What is your question?
Okay, I don't have a question. I have a statement. I am a victim of a shooting. I also am a gun owner. I don't care about the NRA. And I don't care about black and whites. I know why the answer to his actions after the shooting, why he did what he did or didn't do.
Why is that?
He is an Irishman. Irishmen are white. Those boys are black. You can't tell an Irishman. I can. An Irishman has the drinks of alcohol that he had with his kind of temper. You've got two kinds of Irishmen. You've got the loving kind, and you've got the mean ones. Mm-hmm. And this man had already had enough to kick off that Irish temper. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he would have never pulled up next to that Durango. He would have never got that gun out of that car, and he would have never engaged those black boys.
Well, here's
the thing.
Nobody
sees it. No one sees that because he's white.
And I think you have to look into the fact that he was a jerk. He was a bully. According to the neighbor, and Levi and Kathy, maybe you can even jump in here too. His little boy was terrified of him because his little boy was not this, you know, big, super macho kid. He was a bit more delicate than that. No big deal. But that was not good enough for Michael Dunn. And that poor little child would go over to this neighbor's house just terrified of his father. This man is a skanky scumbag. And it just makes me crazy.
Did you just call him a skank?
Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I meant to say something else. I was going to say something else, and that came out.
Levi, Trisha has very little filter.
I do. Well, I was going to say even something a lot worse, and I stopped myself, and my lips were going.
Here's the thing. I don't even think that he was drunk. I think that he's just mean natural. I don't think that he has to drink to be mean, because didn't they say that he only had four drinks at the wedding? And this guy is well over 200 pounds, and he's tall. Four drinks is not going to get him drunk. So I don't think that he was drunk. I think he's just naturally mean.
I could tell when some Irish people have one drink. You can see the change in them. If they're bullies, they're bullies, and he's a bully.
There is
and
no doubt he's a bully. Let's see. I'm sorry. I'm dealing with some administration issues here, and I apologize if I seem a little spacey, more spacey than normal. I'm spacey no matter what, but this is like double spacey. So I'm reading, I'm typing, I'm trying to chew gum, pat my head, and talk at the same time. So I do apologize.
I'll mute it, and you can go on with your show.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. You know, I heard, like, bubbles in the background, and I thought, what is she doing? It was just bubbling, like it was a blah, blah, blah. I thought,
that's
sounds like...
one of my... She called me Cece. That's what they call me, just because I'm on Whoop TV. I'm online as Court Chatter, so they just abbreviated to CC. So that's one of the regulars in there, and
oh,
she's a lovely lady.
She's a
lady.
Sweetheart. She is.
Yeah.
She's very sweet. I was a little wary to answer that phone, believe me. But I'm glad it was somebody normal. Here's what we're doing if you'd like to call in. If you'd like to call in, you need to come into the chat room and type, "I'm calling in." That way we can look at your profile, and if you're a crank caller, we can deal with it. So it's just crazy. Let's talk a little bit about what is next. Now, today is Jordan Davis's birthday. And if you saw his mother and father, they have
yes.
handled themselves with such grace. And even his dad said, normally I'm not one to hold my tongue. Basically, I usually come out mad, he says, but I want to do, and I'm paraphrasing here, I want to do more. Jordan deserves better, and we're just going to, you know, keep going. And I think they know that the nation is behind them, really. Because, let's face it, two things here. First of all, here's the deal. You have a teenager, and unless that teenager is, you know, an angel, and there are angels out there, they can be mouthy. My child, I adore him. I love him. He is a wonderful child. He can be so mouthy sometimes, it makes me crazy. And that's all Jordan Davis was doing, was just being a goofy teenager. And that is what I think has really kind of brought everybody together, is we know kids can do stupid things. He didn't deserve to die. And secondly, the other reason that people are all coming together is it's obvious this should have been first-degree murder and what happened. And I think, Kathy, CC, I like that. I think what happened in the jury room is exactly what you and Levi have been saying. It might have just been one juror who was like, hey, I get it. He was scared. There's a bunch of black dudes there. He was scared. Stand your ground. So what we have to look forward to now is another trial. And Levi, do you think that Angela Corey is going to try and bring in anything that this neighbor said? Obviously, like Kathy said, you can't just bring in stuff just to bring it in to make them look bad. You have to tie it in. And I think she could easily do that. But because you need to look at Michael Dunn and who he is and what his temper is like. And I mean, do you think she'll – I think she should try
it. It depends. They can't automatically put it in. The defense has to open the door to allow character evidence in, because trials are not about is this a good person or is this a bad person, what he's done in the past. It's about what did he specifically do that has him inside that courtroom facing charges. So mm-hmm. normally it's not allowed in unless the defense brings in someone and says, hey, he's a good guy. They did. They had someone that said that he was peaceful. That's how he described Michael Dunn. So it was open during the first trial. Is it going to be open during the second trial? That remains to be seen. And I think that possibly if the door is open, Angela Corey may try to get it in. However, a lot of attorneys have said that it's a slippery slope putting that in, because mm-hmm. A defense can argue on appeal that this is too prejudicial, that it has nothing to do with what happened specifically that night, and he may get a new trial on appeal. And I think that that's why Angela Corey's office did not put it in during this trial. And I think that not only do prosecutors have to try to get a conviction, but they also have to make sure that they don't go overboard where there is going to be issues raised on appeal. They want to secure the conviction. And I think that's probably what her office was doing. Mm-hmm. They faced a lot of criticism for not putting these in. And I think that possibly it could come in the second time if the defense opens the door, but only if the defense opens the door.
Well, I think now that this neighbor has spoken out about Michael Dunn and just how creepy he really is, the defense would be foolish to open that door. Kathy, have you heard when this retrial might take place?
No, that won't happen. We won't know that at all. They're going to meet back on March 24th with a pre-sentencing report to talk about that, and on that date they'll set the sentencing date. But there won't be a date set for the new trial, not in the next few days, at least, probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, we won't know that, what I'm saying. There won't be a decision made on that for a little bit.
Well, they haven't even announced that they're, recharging him, so.
Well,
she did say.
They said they will, but they haven't.
Yeah.
formally done it. They haven't formally.
Right.
They said they will, but they haven't formally.
And he's not going to, you know, to retry him is only to, I need better words than make a point, but because he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. So he's
mm-hmm.
done. They want to get justice for Jordan, and I get that. It's going to cost a lot of money to retry him again, and there's no way he's going to do any kind of plea or any nothing because he has no reason to. He's in prison the rest
mm-hmm.
of his life, so he has no reason not to go through another trial. So I think public outcry will make it so she will retry him for sure. And you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
What I have read, go on Twitter, everyone, and you can follow some attorneys in Florida, and you can follow an attorney called Janet Johnson, and she's an attorney in Jacksonville who's familiar with Angela Corey's office, and she says that Angela Corey's office retries almost every single mistrial. So they're not just making an exception with this case because the public is fascinated by it. She does it in almost every case that there's a mistrial. She retries the case.
Yeah, so she will.
Okay.
She absolutely will.
Yeah.
Levi, you have your finger on the pulse of the world as well, like Kathy does. Have you received anything from anybody that says, I get it, I would have been scared too and shot?
No. No, not really. I think even people that were defensive of George Zimmerman were not as defensive in regards to Michael Dunn, simply because he shot at this teenager 10 times, even as the car was in reverse, moving away from him. So the people that are not as defensive as him, I think that the only thing that I can see is people were saying this is overcharged, Angela Corey's office is being overzealous and overcharging. That's the only defense I've seen of Michael Dunn. And I have seen some, you know, there's some weirdos in every single case that have these bizarro views and radical views. I've seen a couple of those, but that's few and far between. But I've seen a lot of people that are just angry at this prosecution team for not being overzealous enough, and I just don't understand that, because the reputation of Angela Corey's office is that she is overzealous, and people are saying that she under-prosecuted the case and was not aggressive enough, but then she's accused of being too aggressive, so it doesn't make sense. Her office is being hit from both sides of the barrel, and that seems a little bit unfair to me.
And that's what I was going to bring up. I heard several talking heads, and I was only watching CNN because other than, you know, Woot TV, CNN was the only station covering it that I could find. But and they were saying that Angela Corey should resign. You know, she's just done such a horrible job. There's no way that this should not have been found first-degree murder. And they were very serious. And I thought, you know, I'm not a fan of
Angela
Corey. But go ahead.
I think that she's too overzealous in some cases. This is not the case. There is a case of a young black female whose boyfriend, or I think it was her husband, she was separated from him, had a restraining order against him. I forget the name of this woman, but it's a very sad case. She's in prison now. She got a new trial.
Melissa Alexander.
Yes, Marissa Alexander. And this guy has a history of beating women, and she fired a warning shot at him, and now she was convicted and is in jail for decades, and she couldn't use Stand Your Ground law. Corey's office has aggressively pursued that case and aggressively prosecuted her. So
overly.
I think overly and unfairly. I think if you want to criticize her, don't criticize her for being lenient on people, but maybe criticize her for going after people like Marissa Alexander a little bit too much.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. I had forgotten about that case. That is so awful. Cece or Kathy from Court Chatter, tell us a little bit more about that case, because it is appalling. It's just like you just feel like you're in the Twilight Zone. What happened?
Well, I would love to tell you, but I don't know. Off the top of my head, I knew the details of it, but it's not coming to me right at this minute. But she came. There's defenders of Angela Corey prosecuting her because mm-hmm. She shouldn't have been there, and she came back to the house, and they were in a fight, and she actually had to leave the house and go out to the garage, I believe, don't quote me on this, get a gun, and then come back in. And then mm-hmm. and then shot a fire. So there's defenders of Angela Corey on this because it sounded like Marissa Alexander had ample opportunity to get out of the house.
Yeah,
but did. I'm not big to speak on this case because I'm not totally up on it.
Yeah, and you know I think that she was offered a plea deal where she would get lesser time in prison, and she rejected the plea deal. And her children were in the house when she fired the gun, so there were safety concerns there. She mm-hmm. obviously acted inappropriately, but I think putting her in jail for decades it leaves a sour taste in your mouth because mm-hmm. she didn't kill anyone at all, and this guy
right.
has a history
yeah.
of beating women. I think he even right. admitted to beating women in the past. She had a restraining order against him and had choked her. The victim is unsavory, is an unsavory character, but, you know, we have, you know, child molesters that get less time than that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's so frustrating about it and so unfair. Okay, we're going to attempt to take another phone call if my computer will bring this phone number up. Hold on just a minute. It's thinking, it's spinning. And we have area code 760 on the phone. Area code 760, go ahead, please, with your question.
Hi, yes, I have two comments. The first one is, I don't really understand the big deal if he's going to be in prison for 60 years anyway. Why would you waste the time and resources to retry him?
Well, I think it's because
right.
the deal is, and that's a valid argument, but the thing is, if he gets off on that first-degree murder, then that will leave the impression that you can get off for killing somebody for playing loud music. That's why. And what's your second
also,
comment?
Think of it,
oh, go ahead,
think
Levi.
Of it this,
but
think
but
of
he's
it,
not really getting off. He's going to jail for 60 years.
Right, but the
well,
next time
this
somebody...
Well, think of it this way. Put yourself in the shoes of the family of Jordan Davis. There was a mistrial on the murder of your son. You would want it to be retried. You don't want people to think that he was the perpetrator in this case, and that Michael Dunn was somehow justified. And I think that they are taxpayers in the state of Florida. Their son was a citizen in the state of Florida. He lost his life very early, and they have a duty not to really care about, oh, this is wasting taxpayer money, or, oh, he's going to be in prison anyway. But they have a duty to seek justice for someone who was a citizen of that state, who was a victim of a crime, whose parents were taxpayers in that state. And also, I think that one reason they're doing it is the defense could say, look, he was found, they couldn't agree on the murder of Jordan Davis, so we're going to try to use that on an appeal to
right.
get him off on everything else. So it would be strategically smart for the state attorney's office to retry this case to get a conviction on that, to maybe stop an appeal on the attempted murders of the
and
three
caller, let me,
what about
caller,
the what about the information that Jordan Davis is part of the Wood Ape Society?
That Jordan Davis
what?
Is what?
Part of the Wood Ape Society.
What I
what
no I you know what.
Is that?
The Woody Society is where Jabappies get together.
There we go. We got him.
All righty then.
I knew it. I just knew it. Oh, boy. So, anyway, I don't even know what the hell they were trying to say. The first question was a good
see, those
one.
Those are the nuts I'm talking about, Tricia. Every single
yes.
case has these nuts where somebody
these
is a member
people.
Of the Illuminati and,
yes.
or some secret society that's out to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for calling in. You gave us some
yes.
great entertainment tonight.
It was fun for a while. I just, you know what, when I heard the voice, I thought, this person is too young. And I just think she's probably got somebody in the background. But then the question was, you know, pretty good. And then, boom, there we go. Well, I'm just not going to bother. I'm not going to take any more calls tonight because I don't need this aggravation, for goodness sakes. Oh, hey, you know what? Can I change topics? And I know I told you guys that I was just going to ask about Michael Dunn, but I had something kind of unusual happen, and I want your opinions on this. First, Kathy from CourtChatter.com, you followed the Casey Anthony case closely, right?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know you then. That's why I'm asking.
Right.
And,
yes.
And, of course, Levi did. Okay. Dominic Casey. Do you remember that name?
Yes, he has a book.
Yes. Now, people are telling me that he wants to talk to me, and I, you know what, he can contact me if he wants. That's fine. But isn't the book saying now that he thinks Casey is guilty? I don't know. I just heard about this a little bit before I went on the air. Levi, do you know anything about it?
I've been contacted by someone who knows him mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
I probably the same person that contacted
yeah.
you.
Oh yeah, okay.
You know, I don't know anything about the book. I haven't read it, so I'm not going to judge it one way or the other, but I think that he is really going after Jose Baez and the whole defense strategy that and everybody. Dominic Casey was I think he represented the Anthony family, correct?
He was a private investigator.
He's the one that was talking on the phone when they were looking around for Kaylee's body.
Yeah.
And he was a big defender of the Anthonys for a long time.
Yeah,
but I don't know anything about it, and I was just going to bring it up because
the book is called Privilege Waived, and if you go to Amazon, it says this book is currently unavailable because there is an issue with its description, content, or formatting. We are working with the publisher to fix the issue. As always, we value customer feedback. And I don't know the details of this, but maybe the Anthony family said, hey, you represented us. You signed a confidentiality agreement. Mm-hmm. You cannot be putting out information on the book, in your
right.
book. I don't know. Maybe that's why it's under review. But it's an e-book that people can read on their Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not published by, you know, a big publisher. And I'm not judging that because a lot of people
there's some great books that
books.
Are self-published now.
Yeah.
Wonderful books.
Yeah, there is.
Well, I just don't...
There is.
I just,
but when it's published by, you know, a big company, they have... a legal team that goes through everything to make sure that they're protected from a lawsuit. So I don't know anything about the credibility of the book because I haven't read it. And to be honest with you, I don't know about you, Kathy, but I am just completely burned out on Casey Anthony. I followed that trial every single day. I followed it every single day. I followed even the aftermath. I appeared on TV to talk about the case, and I just I'm so sick of Casey Anthony. I'm so sick of her family. I'm so sick of her attorneys that I'm not even interested, to be honest with you.
I read every single document, every single letter. There wasn't anything I didn't know about Casey Anthony, and now I want to wipe her from my memory.
I agree with you, but here's the thing. I'm telling you, whenever I do a show on Casey Anthony, doesn't matter how long it's been, it's a big draw. It's a huge draw. If there's anything even slightly new, it's another huge draw on Web Sleuths. You know,
that's
people
true.
Still want to talk about it because I think people are still angry that she got away. And it just galls people to no end. I just don't know enough about Dominic Casey or this book to decide whether I should have him on or not. But I was just wondering if you guys had heard anything about it. And it's funny that, you know, that after all these years, here comes another book. So,
yeah.
Oh, Scorekeeper
well,
has
you know,
a great
he,
question. Oh, go ahead,
well,
Kathy.
I was just saying,
go ahead.
He was the private investigator the Anthonys hired to help them find Kaylee, okay? And so mm-hmm. Cindy testified that, Lee Anthony said that Cindy told him where to go find Kaylee, which was right in the area. But mm-hmm. Cindy testified that she'd received a tip from a psychic that Kaylee was in that area, and then she told Dominic Casey to go search that area. So that was kind of his involvement. So he was kind of really intermingled with the family. So I'm sure he's got some inside scoop or whatever in his mm-hmm. book, but that was sort of his role during that.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to
wait
and see.
I also know that he tried to insert himself in the Haley Cummings case, and he didn't get too far.
Oh, I didn't know that, really? Well, there you go. Okay, we do have it. Let's go back. We're switching back and forth here. Let's go back to Michael Dunn. We'll wrap it up in just a little bit here. We do have a good question from Scorekeeper. Scorekeeper wants to ask Cece or Levi, do either of you think the jury gave up too quickly? Kathy, let's start with you first.
Heavens no. Not this jury. That was, you know, what was it, 30 hours or more? And I think they came very quickly to the guilties in the attempted murders. And I think mm-hmm. it was hours and hours and maybe even days spent on that first count. I think they were very thorough. I think they asked for more. They asked to review things. They talked this out. They said they didn't want to give up when they first told the judge, we've reached verdicts in four of the five, but we haven't on the one, but we're not done yet. We're still going to discuss. I think that they didn't give up. I think what happened was they knew at that point finally, even though they tried that if it was one holdout or two or three or whatever, that there was no changing their mind, and they were done. So in this case, I say absolutely not. I think the Casey Anthony jury was a little more of the give-up kind, but I think this jury put in all they had.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. Levi, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that they could have gone a little bit longer. Because I remember they said they couldn't come back with a verdict. The judge read them the Allen charge, and then not long after he read them the Allen charge, they came back again. And at first, everyone thought that they did have a verdict on all counts, but then it turned out that they couldn't reach it on the killing of Jordan Davis. So I think that maybe one more day could have made a difference. This is what I'm thinking. I know that Kathy says that she thinks that they thought he was guilty of something. They just couldn't decide on which count it was, second, first, manslaughter. I'm thinking that if that's the case, then they could have compromised. They could have said, okay, you know what? Those that think it's first degree, why don't you just come down to second degree? Because at least he'll be convicted of something. Mm-hmm. And this case will not have to be retried. I'm certain that there was someone who specifically thought that he was justified in shooting Jordan Davis, and they would not budge. And I'm betting it was that older male on the jury with the sons in their 40s. I'm betting that he may have identified and sympathized with Michael Dunn. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking that is the holdout or one of the holdouts on this jury. And I think that he thought that Dunn was justified and wanted to find him not guilty.
I think you're absolutely right. I just find myself agreeing with you guys all the time. I wish I could disagree. It would make it more interesting, but I can't. Kathy at courtchatter.com, what do you have coming up this week, my dear?
Tomorrow is closing arguments. Tomorrow, even though it's a holiday, the judge is holding court in North Carolina on Amanda Hayes' murder trial. Mm-hmm. So those are closing arguments of tomorrow, and I've got the live stream on courtchatter.com, and I've got information on her trial there. This is the her and her husband, Grant. Grant was already convicted last fall of the murder of, I hate this word, but Grant's baby mama. She was killed, dismembered. Her body parts were put in coolers and then dumped in a creek. And he was already convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life, and now this is Amanda's trial, and it's wrapping up tomorrow. That's going to be interesting because I'm not convinced they have proven first-degree murder on her. So that'll be a really interesting jury deliberation to see how long they take. So we'll be in verdict watch again this week.
So it's going to be a busy week for you, too.
Case starting tomorrow is a retrial of Raven Alvaro Aurora. He's accused of stabbing and killing his pregnant wife, and last year it was a mistrial because it was 11 to 1 for guilty. So he starts tomorrow, and I believe it's jury selection tomorrow. So that, and that one will probably be live streamed because it was what his last one was. So we'll probably be watching that one as well.
That's good. That'll be a very interesting one, and we do have a thread on that at Web Sleuth as well. Very interesting case. Levi Page, what's going on in your life this week?
Well, you know, I'm going to continue to blog on my website, levipageshow.com. I'm going to be blogging the fallout over the Michael Dunn verdict and whatever topic interests me. So check out my website at levipageshow.com.
And are you still doing your show Thursday nights?
I am. I'm going to be off the next couple of nights because I have some stuff going on, but I am still going to be doing my show Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Thank you, Levi, and thank you, Kathy. You guys are just both fantastic. You make my job, like I said, so easy. And I would like to invite everybody to the new show on iHeartRadio through Clear Channel, and there's links up. We're going to have a page set up soon where it'll be really easy to get to the show on iHeartRadio. But it's Thursday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern, and I'm really pushing it because we got to convince the Clear Channel people that we need a five-day-a-week real, true crime radio show. So anyway, look for the link to the show. You just listen to it live from 8 until 9 Eastern time every Thursday. And if you have any questions, you know, my email is everywhere. You can contact me. Look me up at Twitter, Tricia Griffith at Web Sleuth, and if you have any questions at all. Well, I'm going to have Holly Hughes on this week to talk about the Michael Dunn case. So more on that a little bit later. And everybody else, thank you so much for joining us. I really, really appreciate it. And do not forget, please, that today's show is sponsored by Paws for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. And remember, Paws for Purple Hearts is the very first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train their service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. Fantastic organization. www.pawsforpurplehearts.org. And do remember, the opinions expressed on Tricia's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Tricia's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuth.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. In other words, if you hear something on the show tonight that upsets you, come to me, Tricia, and we'll make you happy all over again. It's Tricia's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.